Welcome to Liberty Station. I'm Bryce Eddy, and I am still solo hosting this while my partner Rob McCoy is out there running around the country trying to save the Republic, get churches waking up, you know, one or ten at a time, whatever he can do. So I'm here with a second part of an episode that I did with Dr. Jeff Nordella. How are you, sir?
I am good. Thank you very much. And yourself?
I am doing well. Yeah. So in our first episode, you know, we kind of went over your bona fides and, you know, who you are and, you know, the fight that you're in this world and what you're all about. And today, this is like an educational one. So I got myself a caffeinated beverage because, you know, I went to LAUSD and, you know, public school system, you know, it's handicapped me. So, man, I have to really pay attention to this one here. We're going to get into some details on the virus itself. We're going to talk about natural immunity and all of really what that means in preparation for what is going to be our part three, which is we're going to come back and go over a study that you did, which is right now with the statisticians. And, you know, they're going over this study that you created with a sample size of about 250 patients. Is that right?
No, actually, we had probably about 700 patients.
Okay. And with that, it's going to really lay out, you know, why our immune system is not just important, but also why, you know, the prescribed method they've been using by jabbing us all and all those sort of things and discounting the immune system is a real travesty. So with that, do we want to get that first slide up here and just
Please.
Talk about the virus itself?
Please.
And I know that we've gone over some of this stuff, and some people have been paying attention since the beginning of the pandemic and all of this thing. You know, there was a lot of educational charts that went out there. I know we as a church on our original live stream before we, you know, got this beautiful studio in Liberty Station and everything there, I know that we had some doctors talking about this, but I think this is a nice, clear and concise, but at the same time, comprehensive setup of really what this virus is. So I'll let you take it away from there.
Yeah, so this is, I'm sure people have seen this quite a bit. It just is the diagram here of the virus itself, and you see that there's different proteins. Proteins can be very non-harmful to the body, are very immunogenic to create antibody responses. And you have the E protein on the outside of the virus, the spike protein, everybody knows about the spike protein, excuse me, and the subunits of it in the receptor binding domain, so forth and so on. And then the M protein. And this virus has five major variants. We're at the fifth now. And has in that spike protein where it says S protein, as has in the literature been approximately about 30 different mutations.
Yeah. So along those lines, should we go to the next slide
Sure.
that kind of breaks it out?
Yeah. Right. This is the inside of the virus, and so what we measured in the study is the antibody, semi-quantitative antibody to the spike protein. That gives you a number, and then a quantitative measurement on the nucleoprotein, as you see there. The nucleoprotein is associated with the RNA. The RNA is in the purple and blue inside. You see where it lists the viral RNA. So these are the two antibodies that we measured in this study to this patient population, and then interviewed the patients and found out who had the virus, who didn't, and how they correlated.
Okay, so when we were sitting here briefing before we began this episode, so you were talking a little bit about the virus. Okay, it has no metabolism. Okay, tell me a little bit about what that means. The other thing the comment that you made, you likened it to an example of a pencil on a desk, no metabolism, no life cycle. So explain, you know, a little bit of that so we understand.
Right. So what you're seeing there is a structure. It's a structure of proteins. It has no, it does not have its own metabolism. There's no, like a cell has organelles. The most famous obviously is the DNA in the nucleus, and then you have mitochondria. Mitochondria then take and make ATP through the process of chemical reactions in oxygen. The ATP molecule is then used for energy. So this has none. So I tried to use the example and say, put a pencil on a table, walk away. 2 weeks later, come back. The pencil would be basically dissolved on the table. You would not be able to use it to write. Now, the pencil could make more pencils if it had a host and machinery to make more pencil. Okay, and that's the same with a virus. So you are the host. Without the host, the virus entering your cell and using your machinery to make more virus packaging in it and re-releasing it, it wouldn't exist. So.
Okay. All right. So now when we were talking earlier, and what I found was fascinating is, you know, talk about the spike protein itself and, you know, how that plays into things. Because, you know, obviously the term spike protein has been out there. They're talking about it. I don't think people really understand what that means. So explain what that really means and explain that in context to the vaccine and, you know, and the changing iterations of this particular virus. So...
Yeah, so when the spike protein is the protein, the dominant protein by which the virus will enter the cell, okay, different from how a vaccine will enter a cell. So the spike protein is needed, and you need the binding protein on the cells called ACE2. ACE2 is angiotensin-converting enzyme 2. You have a 1, okay? And we talked last time, I think, is that it's a molecule that's made by your body that protects you. And it goes to particular organ systems. And we talked about the brains, the lungs, the heart, the GI tract. It's in adipose. It's in kidney and so forth. And ACE2 is very interesting. The reason it is that when we look at the ACE2 molecule, you have serum ACE2 and you have tissue fixated ACE2. So as we get older, our ACE2, we make fixates to tissue to protect the tissue. Big one is for blood pressure. So children have this ACE2 receptor actually in the serum. So as they get the virus and the virus then spreads throughout, the ACE2 actually acts in essence as an antibody, which it is not. It's not classified as an antibody, but it's a protective mechanism. So it's just really very fascinating. But that's how it attaches to the cells.
Okay, so that's why, and I don't think I understood, but that's why the kids were not susceptible to this in the way that adults were.
One potential causation, correct?
Okay, all right.
So from there, basically, when it enters the cell, it uses your cellular machinery, and it says, "I'm here. We're going to take over. We're going to make more of the virus." Package the entire virus, which is, as you can see in the photo, is quite complex.
The entire structure.
And then eject it from the cell, okay, and put it and spread. So it can spread again from the respiratory route, so forth and so on, down into the lower tissue. This virus can cause tissue damage directly and indirectly. So that's when the body starts to get the viral overload, and a viral load is how many they can measure viral load in so many X numbers per, you know, unit area. People get overwhelmed with this, and you have of your immunity, you have your initial response, innate immunity. So you have different antibodies, and you have an IgM, which goes up first, and the IgG, and then what people aren't talking about, which I found very fascinating, is the IgA. So the IgA is actually your first defense. So it's the guy sitting on that castle wall stopping the invaders from coming through. If you do not have that IgA, obviously people come into the castle and take over, and the infection is off. In fact, IgA has been identified in quite a bit. We'll go to a slide in a minute. We'll show that. You get this antibody response. Then the T cells become activated, and then B cells and T cells gets very complicated, so I'm just trying to minimize it. Get into tissues. They make more antibodies, become plasma cells, make more antibodies, and then they trigger a memory. So the B cell and T cells that have seen it. And we talked about T cells last time, is how the T cells, when the antibodies come on, they lock it up. They call it neutralize. So they neutralize the virus because they saturate all of the little red molecules. So they can't enter the cell. So when that occurs, then who cleans it up? The T cells. So they have to be activated. And that's a very, very complicated
process. Okay, so can I go back and ask you a question? So in early on, you know, in the pandemic, they, you know, had people wiping down their groceries and wiping surfaces and sanitizing everything like crazy. And that's still kind of continued. You know, everybody's got sanitizer everywhere and all that. But yet early on, they determined that it didn't really live on surfaces like they thought and all that. Of course, we, you know, big hand sanitizer, whoever's behind it, kept us, sanitizing and everything in that way. But so why didn't it live on surfaces or spread that way and instead only being aerosolized or whatever?
Well, remember, it doesn't live.
Right.
It exists. So okay. I would replace that word.
Okay, yeah. Great.
And it does. And
good
it's
distinction.
Like, it's like any virus. It's if it is on a tabletop, it can be spread.
Mm-hmm.
There is a oral route that you can get a GI effect from this virus, and nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and so forth, and enteritis. So it does exist. And, you know, this whole thing is about balance.
Right.
So it's like, you know, to knock your tabletops down, I as a doctor, it's a technique, a sterile technique. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, do we dip everybody in chemicals that disinfect, you know, every 5 minutes? I mean, we just have to keep balanced with it.
All I remember is at the beginning of all this stuff, you walk into a grocery store and you could smell nothing but whatever their sanitizers were in there, which could not be good for our systems, right? Now this whole other kind of toxin is everywhere, on everything, on every surface, and you're over sanitizing your hands over and over again 30 times a day. And I know that we do have, you know, powerfully important bacteria and different things that exist on our skin and all that stuff that is vital to our healthy existence, that they're destroying by bombarding everything with all this toxic stuff.
Absolutely. And you have to, if it's taken internally in any which way, respiratory or whatever, through the mouth, you have to metabolize it. So you're correct. I mean, and again, that's when you get back to balance. And those chemicals will basically break that pencil apart.
Right.
So quickly. And that's what you want. So then it doesn't become active. So again, we just need to be balanced, I think. So.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, so let's talk, if we can now, about, if this is appropriate time to talk a little bit about the mutations, because I found that interesting as we were kind of briefing about, you know, the mutations are just changing one part of the structure of this thing, correct?
Well, it's changing a lot. Uh-huh. Actually, a lot of the proteins mutate in viruses. And but I wonder if I could go to the IgA component of this first, because then we'll kind of go down the line.
You keep us on track.
Okay.
Because I'm just trying to stay with it and pay attention and absorb.
No problem.
It's the exercise of my brain.
So, again, as this virus, you inoculate someone with this virus. You give them enough of a viral load and they're susceptible and they do not have any antibodies. This thing is going to attach and it's going to get intracellular. It's going to replicate. It's going to spread. It's going to hit all of these different organ systems. And we talked about the olfactory and the taste, cranial nerves last time. But I just found, again, on the onset of this infection, in a natural immunity patient, they have a level of very specific viral IgA. So that's, they call it secretory. Now, I don't want to confuse anybody, but I have to make the point. When you get the virus and it gets blood-borne, you set up these germinal cells or germinal centers, let's just say, and that's where a lot of production is happening. We'll just leave it at that. So you're making antibodies and you're making the IgM, IgG, and IgA. You're doing that from within and from the blood. But as you get this virus we talked about last time, which I think is fascinating, you get a sore throat and you start swallowing. Mm-hmm. When you swallow, it goes through these very special lymphoid tissues called pyrophagocytes in the small bowel, which then lights that up to make that IgA. And that IgA then goes for further exposure to the virus and then protects you from getting that breakthrough infection, that secondary infection. Now, the vaccine specifically goes into the muscle, goes into the lymphoid, does spread, but I don't believe it ever gets to the bowel to make these very specific. You do make an IgA in the serum. So you make an IgG and an IgA, and it can be specifically to the spike protein. The IgA that you make actually gets into your membranes, but it does by diffusion because the blood is perfusing the membranes, and you do get a small amount in there. And there was an interesting study, I actually referenced it if people want to read it, about how the viral patients do have the IgA in a robust amount. The vaccine does not, after the first vaccine, it drops down to almost 70% of the patients lose the IgA. So they don't get this first line of defense nearly as robust as a patient with who has had the virus in the past. So very, very important. In this article we listed here, it actually lists, and they did the research, and it said might represent a possible cause of COVID severity, which is now has been associated with COVID severity as IgA, and vaccine failure. So if we're not getting that response, now this is just things that people need to know. I'm not here making the decision. I remember the risk and the benefits. So the question is what is the benefit then versus having had the virus and then, and we're going to get into that in a minute with another slide, but if having had the virus versus having the vaccine.
All right. I want to get into that.
Okay.
All right. I think that's what
and,
everybody
we, and then
wants.
We can get into the mutations, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's part of the whole conversation. Should we go to that, that chart then?
Sure.
All right.
So please.
Okay. So,
we need to go back one.
Yeah, let's go back one. All right, so on this one, so this is setting up for that chart that we're going to show, right? This is the study that came out of, or what?
This is a study that kind of I wanted to look at because the whole issue of doing what I did was looking at the inequities of what was happening in our society to somebody who has had the virus before and who's had the vaccine.
Yeah, because a lot of your motivation, this, you've been working with some first responder groups, you know, you've been providing support to organizations where they're under pressure to get this vaccine, and yet, you know, many have been already exposed, you know, and gained natural immunity through their work with COVID patients, you know, people like firefighters, law enforcement, nurses, you know.
Correct.
They were on the front lines of this thing right from the very beginning and getting robust exposure. You know, many of them got sick. I mean, you know, as you know, through my jiu-jitsu school, about 75% of my guys are all first responders. All of them experienced COVID to varying degrees. You know, mm-hmm. Most of them are, you know, healthy and, you know, robust, you know, people with very strong immune systems because they're exposed to all kinds of craziness all day long. And many of them, you know, sailed right through it with, you know, what we would all look at as a mild cold or flu.
Exactly.
You know, a few of them were down and out for a week. You know, I was down for, you know, 4 or 5 days, you know, felt terrible myself. You know, my wife had it for, you know, a good, you know, 10, 12 days, but it was only 3 or 4 or 5 days where she was really acute and then, you know, felt terrible for a little while, but was functioning. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's the experience of almost everybody that I've talked to who's been healthy, you know, been pretty mild. If we had not been told that this thing was the, you know, pandemic to end all pandemics, we would have just assumed this was a bad, you know, flu or cold season. I'm convinced of that based on what, you know, most of the people in my community experienced. So that being the case, you know, your work is super vital and important because you're showing that, you know, hey, these folks with this natural immunity are, you know, in a more robust position. So why are you forcing a vaccine on them?
Well, right.
Did I sum that up?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have we have numbers and patterns.
Yeah.
To this correlated,
you're using science, right?
clinically with interviewing the patients,
right?
So that was very important. So
okay, so this study,
I think the most important thing, it's the CDC,
right?
If you look in the upper left hand corner, it's Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report. They come out with these obviously weekly, and this one was as of January 19, 2022. So if you look at this, a couple of things to look at is they did a study and they compared four arms or four cohorts of patients. And we'll get to that in 1 second. But if you look at the top, it's the risk, which they put a number on, mm-hmm. for hospitalizations and the vaccinated status and with previous COVID diagnosis. Now, they very important for us here and you're all your first responders. And yes, just make a quick 5 second with that. It just made no sense to me as a physician that's trained in emergency medicine, family medicine, occupational medicine, why we're affecting our healthcare structure by mandating these people do this when is it or is it not really medically necessary?
Right.
So this study is in California. By the way, when we do that and we lose these people taking care of patients, do we not create a public health emergency on its own?
Yeah, we do. That's why our system has been under such strain.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So the important thing to bring about this is it's California.
Right.
So this patient base was California and New York. And this was done in May through November of 2021.
Okay.
So can we go to the next slide, please? Now, you got to really get micro down to the three lines on the bottom, basically the four cohorts here. And I don't use unvaccinated. I use unprotected, because if we just say somebody is unvaccinated, it doesn't tell us the status if they have natural immunity or
right.
not. So I think that's scientifically not accurate. So if you look at the people that have no protection, you look on the left and it says estimated hazard rate. So that's a numerical value of the probability of being hospitalized.
Got it.
And you look at the time on the bottom from the May to October 31st, and you look at the one, and yes, the people who have unprotection, no antibodies in their system, they have that particular graph. But if you look at the three, there's actually three lines below, and very difficult to see, but one, the solid blue is, we talked about that, it's unvaccinated. You can see here is that the dotted gray is the unvaccinated with previous COVID-19 diagnosis. So I'd like to really have people look at that. You see that line is almost in between the black and the blue dotted.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to describe this really quick for
Please.
Those that are not not able to see the visual because they're listening on the podcast. So, you know, so on this chart, you know, you've got that predominant blue line that, you know, looks like the mountain there. And that one, which is going all the way up to that estimated hazard rate, the chart goes up to 18. The peak of that goes, you know, just below that 18 mark for those that are unvaccinated and no previous COVID-19 diagnosis. So to use your parlance, unvaccinated, unprotected.
Correct. Right?
Okay. Then down at the bottom, below what would be the one line, meaning that the hazard rate is extremely extremely low, there is a dotted blue line. And that dotted blue line is those who have been vaccinated, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Alone.
And vaccinated alone. Then there's a real faint line that's in between that, which is sort of a gray line, and those are the unvaccinated but have previous COVID-19. So they're the unvaccinated but protected because their natural immunity responded.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. They are just below the vaccinated line.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Only slightly below it.
Correct.
Now, below that, that line right below that, almost overlaid on it, you know, those are the people that have both gotten the vaccine or booster.
Those are the ones who have had the virus and then got a booster.
Okay.
Which shows absolutely. Now, I don't, you know, when you do a study.
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, because this looks like it was useless.
Correct. We scientifically will say it a little differently. That, that there's, and well, I don't
remember.
Know,
I went to public school.
No problem.
So
no
I
problem.
See it useless.
So when we do studies like this, you compare groups of numbers together,
right?
And you do what they call a p-value evaluation,
right?
So a p-value tells you if is there a significant or a non-significant difference between a group of numbers. So you have to do a calculation. I didn't see any p-values in this study, but just on the graph, if we extrapolate, you will see that there's really no difference between a patient who's had a virus and the patient who's had the virus plus a booster.
Right.
So this is in kind of my wheelhouse of saying, okay, then why are we mandating that without checking to see if a patient has had a virus?
Right. Now, on that, and maybe this is a good time. Well, first, I do have a question.
Sure.
Where's the update to this? Because I see it says May 30th through November 13th of 2021. We've had a whole lot of months since then. Why aren't we seeing an update?
Well, it's been a year if we were looking at May, because it's May now. But yeah, that I think is a real question.
Okay, so I'm gonna guess.
Go.
Because I'll bet the chart doesn't look better for them. It probably looks worse for the efficacy of this actual vaccine compared to natural immunity.
Right.
That's what I'm gonna guess. Because otherwise, if it looked in their favor, or it was going to communicate anything that speaks to the efficacy of this vaccine, or you know the efficacy of their requirements, it would be good, and they would show it. It would help their cause. If it's bad to their cause, they're going to let this thing just slide by.
Absolutely, or they just didn't look.
Those dirty rats.
So, and we would want to know that because if you are really true of heart and you're wanting to protect, then, as you know, we talked about this last time, then show us the science.
So yeah, well, because people, you know, number one, I mean, we need to be able to make our own decisions for these things, and people need to make that, you know, risk calculation for themselves. Should I get this vaccine, especially in the light of what we've seen with this vaccine and the adverse reactions to it, which has been much more than any other quote-unquote vaccine combined. I hate the fact that they changed the definition of vaccine to accommodate or to encapsulate this thing in real time, because that bothers me. But
so I just correct you on one little thing.
Yeah, please.
Is that this, to me, is showing a benefit, not a risk.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something I could tell a patient?
Yeah.
Inform a patient of?
Yeah.
But yes, the information needs to be brought up to date.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, yes, I hear what you're saying, but I'm adding that other factor in, like, okay, if COVID-19 was a death sentence, or COVID-19 was an extreme risk of hospitalization for a healthy person, or, you know, one in five people were, you know, going to be devastated by this thing. If all of that was true, then I would look at, you know, the vaccine and say, okay, you know, there's risks with the vaccine. You know, we're seeing it. I mean, I've had, you know, friends that have been put out by heart attacks and myocarditis and other, you know, things. You know, we know people who've had strokes and blood clots and all kinds of things because of the vaccine, or seeming to be linked to the vaccine. So that being the case, it's do I want to take the risk? You know, COVID-19 is super bad. You know, it's a real danger. You know, all right. You know, but there's some risk here. All right, I'm going to choose this vaccine, you know, knowing all the risks.
Well, yes, and then the question is, do you know all the risks?
Yeah. And well, what I do know is COVID-19 was not all it was cracked up to be, right? They sold this thing as far more dangerous than it was. That has, you know, borne out over time. It wasn't nearly as dangerous as it was purported to be. And then now we're looking at this, and it seems that the protection from the vaccine for those that have already had COVID-19, which means those that have been healthy and sailed through this, I don't see any reason at all to get the vaccine.
Well, and it's the admission from the CDC.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen a lot of this in the literature except for this, and it was a little difficult to get. But I want to go back just really quick, if I could, to the risk of this issue. And that's when we talked about the Pfizer papers last time. Right. And again, I'm a treating physician.
Right.
I rely on them to be truthful and disclose everything they know.
Right.
That's science. Okay. Yeah. So don't withhold. Yeah. Don't make a court go after information. And, you know, it would take us 75 years to get all of the things. We'll all be in a box by then. But the issue is like, why not release it up front so I can guide patients and tell them the risk and
informed consent.
Yeah. And if you look at that, you just take the issue. I was watching television the other night and I just saw this drug commercial come on, and it's like a 30-second commercial, and like 12 seconds are, you know, handed over to, it'll cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, rash, abdominal pain, you know, chest pain, shortness of breath, this, that, you know.
Explosive gas.
Yeah, or what, exactly. Or all of these side effects are listed publicly. So informing the public, good. Informing even the physicians, like me sitting home watching, good, but it should be in the literature as well.
Right.
And they put it within the medications when you get it from the pharmacy. The pharmacist is supposed to let you know of these things too. And then where was that with the vaccine? I didn't see anything except, quote unquote, and even today, it's safe. Well, there's 9 pages. I don't know how many different diagnoses is in those 9 pages that there's a potential side effect. And it's like, well, I didn't know those. And, you know, somebody made a comment that they didn't know, even as a physician, they didn't even know what half of them were. They hadn't seen them before. And it's like, what?
Right.
So that's remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's criminal, but, you know, that's just my opinion. No, that's wild because, it's a joke. All of those side effects that get listed, you know, and they, you know, speed up the guy who's reading it. Because otherwise, they'd never get through it.
Yeah.
It'd take the entire commercial. And we haven't, that none of that has really been disclosed to us. In fact, it's been buried because it has been, again, you know, I think last time I saw it, it was, you know, almost 20,000 deaths. It's probably over that now, that are listed on the VAERS website. Filling out that takes some effort. Going through that process to, you know, log an adverse reaction is a arduous process. It's not, you know, just something that a bunch of people can go on and randomly fill out. We know that there's dangers. We know now in the recent Pfizer document dump, there's a lot of information about that in their trial. I'm still, you know, waiting for people to go through those documents, and there's a lot that are going through them carefully, but the consensus so far, and I urge people to, you know, investigate this on your own because this is again coming out in sort of real time, but it shows a very, very small efficacy rate of this thing, of their quote unquote vaccine. It's not what we were sold. When Joe Biden came out in his press talking about how, you know, hey, you guys, we can all go back to work, we can all this fine, we can end this mask, you know, this thing's great, now you're protected, you know, it doesn't seem to be what they sold us at the, you know, big pharma level or at our governmental level. I mean, is that clear to you too?
Well, it is. I hate to get into the politics, and you know that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that about you.
Yeah,
you are a science-minded guy. I'll leave the politics to me.
Yeah, they're yours. But I think the issue is again, it just gets back to basic humanity.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, these companies are very powerful. They're very bright people throughout this globe. I mean, throughout the planet. I mean, we have smart people out there. Putting their heads together. There's too many things that have occurred that just, I have to say, just is discouraging. This late in my career, it's like to see kind of healthcare go down this this way. But it is, and it's, you know, what I don't get is that you have a significant amount of physicians nationwide here that push back on this. And it's like, well, you know, if the science was so true and pure, you would think that you would not have that group of doctors. And I've listened to them. I'm not part of them, but I've listened to them. And they're well-credentialed, very articulate, and very knowledgeable. And they know science.
Right.
So why do we have that group? If this is all okay, why is there a group? I don't know. It just, it's disheartening. And who loses? The patients.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of this. And that's just, it's horrible. But again, back to the study and, you know, the people looking at their antibody titers. And when I get down to it, and I haven't gotten the data back yet, but if I get down to it and it shows clearly that there is no need to boost patients who have had the virus before. Now, I'm not talking about the patients who have that are totally unprotected. Okay.
Right.
I'm not talking about those patients that are high risk. You know, if you might have a 90-year-old patient that wants to take the vaccine because it is going to not allow him to pass from this, that's his choice.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But my job is to be able with you know, the whole story, the truth, the science truth, is to tell him the risk and the benefits and let him make that choice.
Yeah.
Whether it be a 90-year-old or, you know, a mother trying to guide her 14-year-old or
you
whatever.
I find it hard to believe, unless you have been completely isolated or living under a rock for the last couple of years, especially with Omicron, which, you know, for the first year of this pandemic, you know, I know that there's a lot of people that just, you know, never got sick, you know, kind of seemed to, you know, avoid it entirely. I had, you know, a whole group in, you know, in kind of our community that, you know, didn't seem to get exposed. We didn't know many people that were getting sick, especially in the, you know, in the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 months, you know, it seemed like it escaped, you know, a lot of folks. Then, you know, the Omicron variant seemed to just nab everybody. I find it hard to believe that there are people left out there that haven't been exposed in some way, because even the folks that were double masking, staying, working from home, ordering all of their, you know, food from Uber Eats and, you know, everything else, you know, there's a few that, you know, got online and there was some guy that said he was rage crying because he did everything right and then he tested, you know, positive from COVID. And what I'm convinced of, and I know, you know, more people have said this than me, is a virus gonna virus, you know, and it's gonna get out there. And it seems like it's gonna get out there no matter what. So
correct.
At this point, it seems to me if you just took, you know, and were able to do a super, you know, deep dive on, you know, on our own natural immunity and, you know, really get the details from us all, I think we've all been exposed. I mean, you know, I think that it's spread through our population.
And are in combination vaccinated.
Right.
So, you know, you look at that entire population and you have the hybrid patients that have had both and you've had some with just the vaccine. But yeah, there's a lot of breakthrough now, which is coming from that spike protein. The mutations are about 30, which I've read, and the antibodies don't have the affinity. And people kind of go, well, what's that mean?
Yeah. So can we, in fact, maybe we can go back to that second chart that shows the, you know, cross, there you go. So talk to me about the variations and the mutations and how that works. And then let's relate that to the vaccine and how the vaccine was designed.
So the way I understand it, the first virus that came out, you see the red marker, that's the spike protein.
Right.
Spike protein is a protein. So protein, very important with protein, is the amino acid sequence. Folds, doesn't fold, you know, we can go through that. It has a charge on it, doesn't have a charge on it, but you have a structure. It's a three-dimensional structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it will bond to other chemicals. So that spike protein is what was picked up by the immune system on the initial exposure, called the wild type. Then you had the alpha, then you had the delta, then you had Omicron B1, B2, B2. Now they've mixed XE. So we're, I think, on the fifth variant of concern. Mm-hmm. And so what has happened to that red molecule? That red molecule has 30 different changes in it structurally. So for an antibody to bond to it, not only is there a charged molecule that also has a three-dimensional, we used to call it a lock and key with enzymes and so forth and so on, but it has to be able to bond to it. So don't think of it that way. Think of it as two magnets. The one magnet is red. Your antibody is blue. And how, when we were kids, we put magnets right. together and some went wham.
Right.
And some went very weakly together, but you could feel they had a bond.
Right.
So as we're evolving, do these antibodies from the virus, are they covering the changes in the spike protein, okay, as well as they did? Now, remember, if you got Delta, if you got further down the line, your antibody structure was probably a little closer. Now, I don't know the exact three-dimensional changes that have occurred in this, so it's tough to say. But you have the antibody that is the neutralizing antibody. So keep that in fact. That neutralizing antibody doesn't kill the virus. It neutralizes it, so it doesn't attach. But if the antibody is not binding to the spike, then the antibody is going to bond to the ACE2 receptor. Still has an affinity for that. Still gets in, still causes infection, so forth and so on. So if you've got 30 different structural changes or mutations which give you the structural changes, then you possibly are not going to have the same efficacy of those antibodies that were produced by the first virus. That's where they took the messenger RNA information from, okay?
Right.
And they altered it with the pseudouridine, so it's a synthetic particle. And then you look at the nucleocapsid on this right here. It's another protein that you make an antibody to. Now, according to my research, I've only seen that have four mutations in it. So my thought process is, scientific logically, you possibly, if you have the nucleoprotein, you're still going to have a fairly decent affinity to the nucleocapsid protein or the nucleoprotein, which helps stave off the virus or fight the virus.
Okay, so in my anecdotal experience,
okay,
and the straw poll I conducted. So the folks that got hit by, you know, the Delta variant, and you know got sick, down and out, you know, myself, you know, included in that. By the time the Omicron came around, that magnet may have fit together weakly or attached weakly, but seemed to sail right through. Was no big deal, you know, sniffles. And most people who I know got sick the first round, you know, experienced, you know, very, very mild, if anything, to Omicron. Those that never got sick through the first round got Omicron, and it felt like Delta, or it looked like Delta to me. Like they got hammered pretty good. Does that make sense then?
It does.
Okay.
Because if you have a mild infection, could it be related to the amount of antibodies you responded to?
Right.
We had patients in the study that had a semi-quantitative antibody. It was positive, but it was like 10.
Right.
But they also had a nucleocapsid positive. Now, very important, all of the patients, 100% of the patients we looked at that actually had the virus were positive to nucleocapsid. 100% of the patients who had the vaccine had no nucleocapsid, which is absolutely stated by the lab on one of their forms, because the messenger RNA that they got from the wild type only had the instruction sheet to make the spike protein, not the nucleoprotein. So that's another advantage to the people who have had the virus versus the vaccine.
Got it. So now with the mutations, and this being a coronavirus, which I understand a lot of flus and colds, and correct me if I'm wrong here, are also corona-based viruses, right?
Correct.
So the whole reason why, you know, we can't cure the common cold or all that stuff is this constantly changing, shifting, mutating kind of a game that's being played here.
Absolutely.
Which, again, you know, it all comes down to keep your immune system up, people.
Absolutely.
Go out in the sun, get your vitamin D.
Take vitamin D, right.
Get your good night's sleep. You know, take care of your body. Eat well, eat healthy. Because what we really want to do, you know, all the way along is let's fuel our immune systems.
Yeah, and it's very complicated, and they're all interconnected.
Yeah, well, you talked also on this. So if the vaccine is designed to neutralize the spike protein in the Delta, it was based on the Delta or the Alpha?
Wild type.
Wild type, okay.
First one that came along.
Okay, got it. So because they're only addressing that one issue with the virus, not the rest of it, which our immune system addresses, you know, multi levels of the virus, and right? I'm trying to say this in layman's terms. We've got more tools being, you know, naturally immune. We have more tools to combat this thing than those that just got the vaccine.
Correct. Right. And there's, you know, look at the M protein, E protein, and then maybe 30 other proteins that the virus has.
Right.
Have we measured those antibodies? I don't know. I'm not seeing anything in the literature, but I'm speculating now scientifically that if a protein is a protein, it's foreign to the body, you're going to make a specific antibody to that.
And I think we talked about this on the first time we sat down, but this is where I think, you know, I've had people go out, get their antibodies tested. It's not showing that I have antibodies, but they're only testing for one type of immune response.
Correct.
Right.
And they could have been PCR positive. I've had patients that were PCR positive on history who had symptoms, who didn't make a response. Had no response to either one. And it was like, so I repeated it and still didn't have a response. You have that small group of patients. And then you have patients that had PCR positive, no symptoms at all.
Right.
But highest maximum spike protein you could have.
Yeah, but antibodies being present at level means that, you know, they're still kind of like waiting and ready, like recent infection kind of a thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that you don't have them if they're not engaged. Like, are they on the front lines, or are they just hanging in the back waiting for you to call them again?
Well, they're both.
Okay.
And it depends on the time that you get into the virus.
Right.
So initially, again, you get that spike of IgM, followed by a drop, followed then by a spike of IgG. And then the question is how long does that stay positive for? And then it drops.
Right.
But what you do is you've keyed on your B cells, the innate B cells, then become plasma cells, and they make that first spike.
Okay. Right.
And then they drop off.
Right.
But during the process, what is made is the memory cells from the B and the T.
Yeah, so then when you get sick again, you know, then they're like, we know what we're doing here.
Exactly.
We'll gin these guys back up again.
They've seen this enemy before, and within, you know, a day or two, they're on the job.
Good. Okay, I'm glad you explained that, and hopefully that was our audience, you know, got that, because that's what was driving me a little crazy. And again, you know, I'm not a doctor. I do not have this education, but I knew that there's something wrong with what they're talking about here, in thinking that, you know, your immune system is more complex than they're even allowing you to believe. And I think they played some games with diminishing the role of our immune systems in this whole thing intentionally, because that's the way that they, you know, sell these vaccines. And again, I
that's your politics.
And I'll say that. I mean, we've a couple of episodes ago, we had Dr. Yoho in here who was talking about, you know, one of his specialties is the corruption of big pharma and all of that. And if they aren't selling, you know, their job is to sell drugs. And if you are confident that, you know, hey, I had it, I'm good, my immune system's functioning, I'm a healthy person, no, thank you, I don't need it. They don't, you know, they don't make their money. They don't make you a lifelong subscriber of their vaccine protocols.
Well, and yes. So that's the political aspect of it.
Right.
But then we get back to the benefit and the risk. So
the
question is that what benefit do I get, if any? And then now let's go over to the risk column and say, well, what are the risks of which we don't know? I'm waiting for, you know, numerous institutions to review these papers, come back out and say, okay, well, the risk in the studies were X, Y, and Z, and maybe ABC through X, Y, and Z. And we look at this and it's like, okay, now we have the risk. So what are the benefits and what are the risks? And when I sit down with you, a patient, and I say, here's what I know, now you can make your own decision.
Right.
That's, to me, what it's about.
Yeah, which, you know, again, that's what America should be about, is us making our choices and, you know, informed consent and, you know, all of us making, you know, decisions for ourselves. Because I mean, there are people that I do want to, you know, shame and hassle from time to time. And that's the, you know, there's, you know, a bunch of young men that are running around there in the world with, you know, no health, underlying health issues and things like that, that are, you know, running in fear. And I'm calling out men specifically, because I think those are the ones that need to be standing up and saying, yeah, you know, we don't need to do this. And, you know, being strong in the face of moderate risk. I mean, this thing from the very beginning, we know that those, you know, that you have almost a 0% chance of any serious illness with COVID if you're, you know, 25 years old. And yet, you know, those are some of the people that are screeching about masks and vaccines. And, you know, one of my ongoing themes is we need men to be masculine. And so that's particularly...
Well, hence the gym there, I see.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, it's particularly in my...
I'm feeling a little inferior there, but that's okay. Hopefully I'll make...
God's blessing and good genetics.
I'll make it up with my brain tissue, I guess.
You have muscles in your brain that I do not. No, but my point on that is it is so mind-boggling to me that we've had... And I know that the fears have been stoked by, you know, by our political class, by, you know, they've been conditioning us to all be terrified of this thing. And even when we knew in the first few months that, you know, they weren't stacking bodies like cordwood in the middle of the street, and, you know, people weren't, you know, spontaneously dying from COVID, you know, standing in grocery lines and, you know, things like that was just not happening. You know, our vulnerable population, those in nursing homes, those with, you know, 2.7 comorbidities, you know, average age of 78, you know, all of those sort of things, you know, people that were diagnosed with a less than a year to live anyway, you know, all that. Now, my heart goes out to those folks that you know, suffered loss during this time.
Oh,
but we exasperated it all, and we, you know, did not allow people to be at their relatives' deathbeds and, you know, in there as their, you know, family members were dying of other diseases. We deferred treatment for things that were very serious in favor of all of this baloney. That's where I feel sick. And I think the, you know, young men and men in our culture that should have been the ones that were standing up right away, you know, hold a lot of reason to be shameful.
Yeah, so said scientifically, the same thing I think that you're looking at is that, to be fair, this virus is brand new. This particular virus, its brother or sister, whatever you want to label it as, the COVID-1, we had that in our society earlier. That's where we needed that team, those scientific minds to come out and say, let's get on this. Now, as we became aggressive, absolutely, to me, appropriate, okay? But when we knew that it wasn't panning out to what it was, then change.
Yeah.
That's what science is. As we get more data, more information, then change.
Well, but there were too many business interests involved, you know, too much politics involved, you know, too big a commitment. You know, there's a lot of people that I know that were completely wrong on the beginning of this thing, that, you know, we had great, you know, family and friendly, you know, arguments and things like that. And they were all about, you know, wear your mask and, you know, all those sort of things. As this all panned out, I've had one come back and say, wow, you know what? I was wrong. I really blew it. My eyes are open now. And as more information's come out, I feel a little bit bummed out that I was, you know, so committed to that path. no one else will apologize. No one else will go and say, oh, wow, yeah, you guys were right from the beginning when you called this just a few weeks in that this isn't going to be what we're what they were estimating it to be.
Their threshold might be a lot higher. So as we continue to uncover all of what's gone on.
Well, I'm going
to
pray for that. Okay. I'm going to pray for that. I think so many people are blinded and committed, and I am praying daily for for their eyes to be opened, so that we can recruit them to the cause of liberty.
Well, then you get to that whole issue is that then you have to have the information.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the information, and it's either not being looked at, ignored, or being looked at, and then we have to file a Public Records Request Act to get information.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Well, listen, God bless you for doing this work, and thank you for coming on. You know,
sure, absolutely.
Time flies when we're getting into this.
I know.
And I'm looking forward to part three, which we're going to have with you, because I do want you to, kind of live on our program, lay out your findings, because I think it will support, a lot of the common sense and a lot of the other evidence that that is coming out.
Hopefully it'll be good to use for people who will not be stressed and strained, losing their jobs, people looking, employers looking, governments looking and saying, this is a bad path we're on.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that people will wake up and, they'll stop firing our, police officers and our firefighters and our nurses and our doctors and stuff who are saying, hey, I don't need this vaccine and I'd rather not take the risk.
Sounds good.
So, well, amen. Thank you for coming in.
All right.
And, all right, folks, that's it. Part two with Dr. Jeff Nordella. Join us for part three. That'll be forthcoming as soon as all of this data is out. Thank you again so much. And remember, our hope is in Christ. And, we need to fight for our liberty. So, amen and good night.